Welcome to the TerraWatt Space Podcast. This is Saravin. In this podcast, I attempt to demystify the developments in the space industry. I just have one ask before we get to the episode. If you enjoy listening to the TerraWatt Space Podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It's shown to be the most effective way to get the podcast to more people. Thanks a lot. In this episode, I'm speaking with Daniel Zeidel, co-founder of LiveView, one of my favorite Earth observation startups based out of Berlin, Germany. LiveView offers an end-to-end EO-based solution for infrastructure monitoring in the utilities industry, and their mission is to take Earth observation to enterprises. Daniel and I have a lot of conversations in the past about the state of EO and LiveView's strategy. In this episode, we talk about LiveView's journey, their go-to-market approach, the importance of building scalable EO solutions, their investing journey, and a bunch of other topics related to Earth observation. And now I bring you Daniel Zeidel. Hi, Daniel. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Aravind, for the invitation.
Of course. So let's start with your story. We'll get to LiveView in a bit, but what's your story and how did you end up working in the space industry and doing what you're doing now?
So there is a short answer, science fiction, especially Star Trek, right? Everyone who knows me knows that I'm crazy about Star Trek. The long story is actually new space, because I studied mechanical engineering and then focused on space. And so after the bachelor, I realized, like the space industry in the old way is slow and maybe not the industry I want to work in. And actually, because I worked as a freelancer for BMW and Porsche, I actually also wrote my thesis and did the internship at BMW in Munich. And it was very close that I landed in the automotive industry. But then what brought me back to the space industry is new space, is the commercialization of the space industry, which happened back then. Like you could really see Planet coming up, right? It was around 2014, 15, where I was in Munich at BMW. And then I thought, I don't want to stay in this in the automotive industry. So actually, I want to start my own venture in the space industry. And back then, you're visiting conferences and so on, because I had some hardware ideas, right? Some hardware concepts. But then luckily, I met my co-founder Sven, right? It was love at first sight. And then we actually brainstormed ideas, what we will do. Traditionally in a Berlin bar until 4 or 5 a.m. And it was everything. It was downstream ideas, hardware ideas, really crazy things. And and then I was already in, right? So I said, okay, I will now be here in Berlin, start a venture. And it turned out it was a great idea. We started LiveView, right? We are pushing the industry forward.
Brilliant. Before we explain LiveView, so what do you think about the space industry? What has changed in the last 5 years? Because obviously, you know, I can connect with how you felt about the industry because I came in about 5 years ago as well. And, you know, part of the reason was, you know, SpaceX landing its first booster and then the Sentinel missions. There were a bunch of things going on 5 years ago. So how do you see the industry change? Has it changed the last 5 years and in what way, according to you? And then we'll get to LiveView.
Totally. It's totally changing. I mean, just this year, you have seen the specs, right, of Black Sky, Planet, Satellogic, Spire. And this shows that some industries are becoming more mature in the commercial way, right? And this is a strong indicator that the financial industry is also going really deeper into this. But if you see it in a broader picture, it's actually like everywhere, a lot of activities are going on. I mean, Earth observation and communication, I think, are the drivers right now, right? Because it was also it's more intuitive to build a business case out of this. But what I don't know if I should count tourism here, right? There is also a lot of activity going on. But what's also really exciting me is that you now see also demonstrators for really enablers for future space economy. For example, in orbit, maintenance and refueling, right? We have seen demonstrations there just recently. And what I'm also very happy, I have friends at Yuri Microgravity. I don't know if you know them. And we just went out for lunch 2 weeks ago here in Berlin. And And space manufacturing is also a hot topic, right? So I think this is still in its infancy. But also here now you have more players, and the most important thing, more venture capital is also going into those early stage startups. So yeah, it's just crazy. Talking specifically about Earth observation, I think that here we can also see strong indicators that it's becoming more mature, even if it's still in the beginning. And what new space means, you could see in January, actually, with a SpaceX launch with 143 satellites, right? It was one rocket. It's super crazy. One rocket. There were 40 planet doves, like the new super doves with 8 bands on it. At the same time as there were ICEYE radar satellites, right? And we are using both. So for us, you know, you can imagine every new satellite up there, better coverage and better products at the end. Yeah.
Absolutely. Cool. So you've given a lot of hints already. So now let's get to LiveEO. Give us an elevator pitch of, you know, what LiveEO is. I know it very well, I think. But for those who don't know, it'd be good to know what LiveEO is.
Sounds good. So actually, when Sven and I started LiveEO, we thought about, okay, how can we have a big impact? How can we really change our human life? And if you think about what's the backbone of our modern society, it's electricity grids, right? It's pipelines, it's railways. And that's why we are monitoring those infrastructure grids. What they all have in common is that they are distributed over large areas, right? And they have to be maintained. So there are external threats, which you have to be aware of and which you have to tackle on a frequent basis. And that's what we with LiveEO are doing. So we are doing monitoring of those infrastructure grids, for example, regarding vegetation, which could cause wildfires or outages, right? We are monitoring the ground subsidence, which can cause stress on pipelines and actually leakages. This is our mission, actually, to make this infrastructure more reliable, right? And that's a short version. And we will also go a bit more into the long version. So
I like how you pitched the company, because you did not include any technological terms. You didn't talk about Earth observation. You didn't talk about imagery. You didn't talk about radar or hyperspectral or multispectral, because, you know, at the end, people don't care. So now let's get to, you know, how you actually monitor all this. You know, what kind of data do you use? Are you data agnostic? Do you use SAR and optical and other types of data? You know, how does the technology work with LiveEO?
That's a very good question. So it's interesting that you realize that I don't pitch all the technical terms, because I think in the space industry sometimes you hear it different, right? If I would now talk to someone from the space industry and explain what we're actually doing. So we are data agnostic. We don't have one specific data set which we prefer against the others, right? And how I also talk to our customers actually about this is that, look, if you directly go to satellite operators, they have their specific limitations because they have a limited set of satellites. And they typically want to sell you the most expensive data sets. But for some use cases, even if it's more challenging for the algorithms, it's also fine to go with medium or low resolution data, right? And this is also our approach. Like, we try to find the best combination of data sets or the best data sets to actually solve the problem, because the most interesting thing, or the most important, is actually that it's also economically feasible, right? I think what we also, like this anti-data fusion, what we are really good in is also like different resolutions and different sensors also from different satellite operators. And I think you can imagine the challenge thinking about the data access and of different operators, right? Different APIs. And you have to automate all the things. So if you really want to build a scalable product, you need full automation. And this is actually what we are thriving for. I think with all the traditional companies like Airbus, Maxar, but also now the new Planet, from our perspective, like, we are happy to see all those new data sets. And there's even more coming up in the next years, right? More sensors, thinking about hyperspectral. So we are also piloting those data sets already. But long story short, we are happy about every data as long as it is it has a scalable data access and we can automate the things.
Yeah, 100%. And scalability and, you know, the automation is very important, because
you're trying to, yeah, make satellite data usable for an end customer. So basically trying to build a product that they can just integrate into their workflow and then just go about their life, right? So basically trying to plug in where satellite data can help. And how do you do that? Do you have products, or do you have a web tool, or do you have a or do you integrate into, you know, different types of softwares, or enterprise softwares? You know, how does the product get to the customer?
That's a really good question. We thought a lot about this. If we just want to stream data without end user interfaces to our customers, right? But what we realized actually, and this is also what I communicate very often, it's easy on small scale to do satellite classifications, for example, right? Apply CNNs on a high resolution image to classify something. This is not an not a USP for a company, but the real value is actually in creating information which can be understood also by non-experts, and this is also our approach. So we of course have market leading approaches for the machine learning part for the classifications, but then also the context for the customers is extremely important, that you translate it into the language of the customer, into a business problem of the customer. And then actually we realized that some customers are not ready to use, for example, APIs to ingest it into their work flows or their applications, because they don't have those applications. So some our main customer base are utilities, and you know, they don't have necessarily the technical capabilities to directly integrate it. That's why we also have our own web applications and mobile applications. And you can just imagine as simple as a forester who wants to know what he or she has to do in the next week and gets a notification from LiveView. The most critical tree with the highest prioritization is over there. Please go and check it and do an action on this, right? And this is, he does not know that the data comes from space. So this is the preferred
and
way.
Nor does he care. Yeah.
Exactly. So this is a preferred way. But on the other hand, and this is very important in long term, is that you really integrate into the operating systems, into SAP or Infor, right, into the enterprise asset management solutions, and this is really exciting. Yeah,
it's super interesting, because, you know, obviously it's something that I've written about and talked about a lot in terms of the go-to market for the Earth observation market, and then the whole industry is, we have, you know, amazing sets of data, and I've always been fascinated by what kind of insights that we can provide. Every day I learn something new about what we can learn from satellite data. But the problem is, how do you get it to the customer, right? And that's where I think LiveView, you know, you kind of cracked the puzzle there, is you didn't try and launch your own satellites. Great, because there are, I think, in my opinion, far too many of them, without actually making sure what we're going to do with these satellites. You decided to focus on, you know, the other side of the puzzle, is to build a product that goes to the end customer. So I'm curious how your customers see it, because most of your customers, you said, are in utilities. You know, these people are not historically users of satellite imagery at all, or they probably not even thought about satellites. Maybe, you know, some of them have, if they have, you know, good R&D teams, and if they have invested in satellite, investing into satellite imagery before. But what do your customers say? Do they care about satellite imagery? Do they see the point of using satellites, or they're just happy as long as their problem is solved?
Yeah, in the past 4 years, I've really learned how to communicate this. You can do it wrong in a lot of different ways. What always is very good, it's an opener, right? So if you show them nice images and also show them already the application on their use case, they see, oh my God, why didn't I thought about this sooner? So you get this as an opener, right? So it's exciting. But on the other hand, they sometimes then also see those, you know, when they watched movies, I don't know, with Jason Bourne, right? And think you now can see in real time what's happening with with centimeter resolution. You have to work against this expectation. And this is something what we are doing right now, always in our communication with the customers. So, you know, it's exciting, it's new, but it also has limitations. But look what we can do and how we can solve your problems. And you don't need this real-time update, right? Because your workforce can't react to this real-time. So it's already a great product which helps you, right, with the current technology. So this is something what we've seen, yeah. And then I think what's also important, it also depends to which customer you talk. Sometimes they compare it with drones, right? And you also have to say, hey, we from LiveView, we can also analyze drone data. We just published like where you combine it, right? But it comes with its costs. So, you know, you can have do you really need to see the beetle, the bug on the tree to know that there is a tree, right? You don't need this. So why would you spend data from a drone, which is more expensive? It's not necessary to solve this problem. And this is also something you really need to manage, so that that they understand why it's economically feasible, right, and makes sense, and not only from the accuracy perspective. And this is also where the commercial Earth observation industry is going into a different direction than research. In research, also in ground deformation, for example, they're always focusing on this unwrapping part at the end, right, and the accuracy of the time series of the interferograms, and not on the product. And of course, we need accuracy, but we need products, and this is what we also do different.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, it's interesting to talk about it simply because there's just, I think, a lot of focus on, you know, the technology both on the space side but also on the image processing side to improve the, you know, classification accuracy. But, you know, like you mentioned, the product is also super, super important because that's the thing the customer sees. So, it's something that I think we need to, you know, mature as an industry in terms of what to focus on and, you know, what to not talk about as much, because at the end of the day, you know, I've spoken to insurance customers, agriculture customers, and, you know, they don't even understand Earth observation. And improving, 70% to, I don't know, 85% doesn't really matter to them because they don't know what all this means. So it's interesting to see that you guys focus on it. I wanted to ask in terms of, so you mentioned, you know, you have, in terms of your product, you have, it can be a mobile application, depending on the customer, I'm imagining. Some customers want mobile apps, some customers are happy with a web tool, and others want integration into an SAP. Could you walk us through an example use case? Because you mentioned vegetation management, I know you do a lot of vegetation management and ground deformation. So, if you can maybe pick a use case, connected to how you solve a customer problem end to end. Could you kind of give an example of how it would work end to end?
Yeah, I'm happy to do so. And I would also, because I started with a vegetation management case, would go into this. So just imagine you are a utility operating 10,000 kilometers of power lines, right? And 30 to 50% of your outages are caused by vegetation. That's a problem because you're already spending millions on the vegetation management. So you have people out there walking and inspecting actually the grid. But because it's 10,000 kilometers, they can't look, of course, everywhere at the same time. So they have to prioritize. And typically they do it in cycles, right? So they say, okay, within the next 4 years, we want to walk everywhere. So the first year, they walk 2,500 kilometers. The next year, the other ones, and so on. So this is very often the approach how it is done right now. And now they don't have data about this. So they don't know, when they walk there, they look. And they say, okay, here's a problem, here we have to go. But the digitalization is also not really happening. So now what we are doing, actually, we are assessing the entire grid, and it's pretty fast, right? So with satellite data, we can then identify critical spots in not only in 2D, also in 3D, right? So we are even computing different risk models for different voltage levels and so on. So we are really, really deep in this topic. And based on those, data sets on this information, we are breaking down the work actually for the field crew. So, you know, it's we identify risky spots across those 10,000 kilometers, but we also make it actionable. So we create work packages actually for our customers. And now, if you think about this, how do you then distribute information to the people? And there, for example, the manager gets the web application from LiveView. and sees the overview on a map, but also can go into the task level. So he could see, oh, the crew in the north, right? What are they doing? What did they accomplish? And how many tasks do they have? Maybe for next year, I need to change the budget a bit because they have more problems than in the south. And this is all possible with the web application. Now let's switch to the field crew perspective, right? They can now, in the past, they had to walk everywhere and, you know, there's a lot of time to drive somewhere to the power line and then to walk there. It just takes so much time and it's not efficient. And now they can go very specifically to a location, focus it, fix it, right? Focus on it and fix it. And then they can go to the next. And this is actually, you know, this inspection process is optimized and they have actually more time to take care of the vegetation. And this is what all our customers told us, like also with climate change and also, I mean, in the US with the wildfires, like you have really a lot of things to do on the vegetation and not only to look on it, right? And that's what we are making more efficient. And now to have this holistic picture, what happens if you have such a task? You have to delegate it to a person, right? You have to track it, protocol it so that it gets approved. And then also an accounting starts, sometimes in an internal right accounting, but also sometimes you have subcontractor. And this is where our connection also to an SAP, for example, plays a huge role, right? Then it's just streamlined in the business processes, they don't have to change. And in the SAP already, everything is synced with our system. So that's a holistic picture of vegetation management. And this is also helping them then really to move away from this cycle-based approach, which is not really efficient. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super interesting because, you know, I love how you started, with starting from a customer problem or a customer use case, you know, linked it to satellite, but then, you know, it came back to again to the customer and, you know, how it, impacts their, you know, everyday activities and how much cost savings you bring for them. And, you know, that's great because that's a scalable solution and, you know, that can work in the Earth observation world as well, because scalable solutions is kind of what we need in the industry simply because there aren't enough because the industry has so many project-based approaches that, because from what you're saying, this seems like you can scale it across different companies and it can, you know, it can work across, you know, even countries. I'm guessing you also have international customers because, you know, at the end of the day, this use case is, you know, a scalable use case and you've not only just fixed it on a project-based basis where you go and do the same thing for, you know, five different people in five different ways, but you can do it in one single way and that helps you kind of grow.
Yeah, exactly what you just mentioned. I think this is the main difference, right? Like this works from, like we have customers from the East Coast of Australia to the West Coast of the US because this problem is everywhere. But also, of course, here, like this automation plays a huge role and you mentioned the project approach, right? I don't know if you want to touch this topic later, but this is what I've seen in the industry, that a lot of companies are doing this project-based approach, but really scaling those solutions, there are a handful or maybe two handful of companies who really, really do this. Those we also know very well.
No, of course. Yeah, that's basically what the industry needs because we need more of them. We need more of the scalable solutions within the industry because honestly from what I've seen it's just been a lot of project based, and of course in a project based you can have a lot of success, it's great, but it doesn't move the industry forward because, you know, it is not becoming a standard. So basically what LiveView can do is set a standard in the utilities industry for them to use a satellite based solution, you know, through LiveView or someone else. But at the end of the day, you're setting a standard and, you know, that helps keeps the industry moving forward, which is, you know, which is the good thing. I wanted to, you know, touch on investment and obviously you've raised your Series A, I believe, recently. So how hard or how easy was it? Because there's a lot of talk in the space industry about how easy it's becoming to raise money. And part of me thinks that for whatever reason, the 176th launch company is able to attract easier investment compared to, you know, the third or the fourth important Earth observation, you know, downstream software-based company for whatever reason. That's kind of what my assessment is. Is that what was your case? And, you know, how is it, you know, raising money as a company which is not doing anything cool? You know, you're not raising satellites or building rockets.
That's a very valid point. I mean, for us, it worked, right? Let's say it worked. Like the seed round was pretty smooth, and also the Series A was smooth. However, the Series A was during COVID, right? And there we could see implications. So I think if we would have raised 3 to 6 months later, also because we got some larger contracts, the Series A would also have been different. That's why we also doing with a high probability an extension this year, right, of the Series A, and because the market, the financial market changed. And what you mentioned, I've seen this. So there was even one investor, and this was where where I went a bit crazy. Like, we have really, I'm very confident that we have a market leading solution regarding scalability. Yeah. And there is a lot of software IP behind this. And then there was this one investor who said, yeah, but you don't have hardware in orbit, you don't have IP. And I thought, really? I mean, it was a European investor who, maybe didn't really understood software, right? But this was something where I thought, okay, you know, typically in a financing round, you talk to 50 to 90 investors, right? We focus on investors with B2B experience and tech experience, and there you can really have great technical discussions. And here for us, so I agree with you. Right now, it's crazy what money goes into the market, and it's very hard for investors to differentiate the maturity of different solutions, right? And right now, so I think if you put, for example, a climate a sustainability case on your satellite, right? Impact investors will just invest without really going deeper, and this is risky. But at the end, you know, there will also be a lot of great companies where the investments will turn out to be good, and so I think for us, as you mentioned, it's very hard to explain the investors the difference to all those project-based companies. But I think we managed it now, of course, also because we educate the investors, and that's super important. This is what I see as a main change in the past 2 years, that investors now understand the space industry. In our seed round, we talked to investors, and they never talked to other companies, even downstream or upstream. Thinking about Europe, in the US it was different, but in Europe they didn't went into this industry. And now we get so much inbound from investors, right? And even for the Series A, like private equity funds, right, which actually should come later, are contacting us. Why? They get educated about the space industry. They go deeper. They do research, and they also see positive examples. I mentioned the four specs, right? And this is just this is very good that more money goes into this. And I think it's. As in all industries, of course, there will be some companies which don't make it, but that's why it's venture capital, right? So
yeah, 100%. And you know, the education part that you mentioned is so important. And even when I came into the industry 5 years ago, I took so long to even understand what was going on. So I'm not surprised that the investors wouldn't understand, because even for someone being in the industry, it was just hard to, you know, understand what is the value chain. You know, everybody calls themselves an insights company. And for me, you know, that didn't make sense, because, and that's why I wrote one of the blog posts last year, was just for my own understanding and education. You know what, there are basically some data companies and some modeling or analytics companies, and then there are only some insights companies. But unfortunately, the way the industry communicates is also confusing, especially for investors, I would understand, you know, because then, you know, I'm sure people have asked you how different you are from Planet, right? Like that question shouldn't come, but you know, that's
exactly. That's a very good point. And we've heard it extremely often. Yeah.
Yeah. And how, you know, it's that's why I think the education part is very important. And, you know, hopefully I think it's going to change in the next few years. And I will continue doing this through the podcast or the writing. But yeah, I think it's important that we keep sending the right message to the especially as we go into public markets, and you know, understanding how the industry is going to scale.
Yeah, and here I also want to add one thing, because I also as a automotive freelancer, I worked also in the US a lot, and of course talked about the space industry also back then, right, with people. And What I've seen also with in our own podcast with people from the US and Europe, that there is in the society in the US, the space industry, it's just present for everyone, right? Everyone knows Elon Musk and SpaceX, or everyone knew him already in 2014 to 15, where here in Europe, no one talked about Elon Musk, really. Back then, no one talked about him. Now, the past 3 years were crazy in the media. He's there every day. But 5-7 years ago, no one talked about him. And in the US, it was different. Everyone knew him. And also here, investors went into this market pretty soon, right? Orbital Insight 2013 as the role model for downstream. I don't think this would have been possible in Europe, I have to say. Like, I think the investors back then were even more conservative in Europe. And they are now also with the role models in Europe. I think it will change. However, I think for a company, it will still be crucial if you really want to go to the top, right, to raise capital also in the US. So right now, our investor base is mainly in Europe, but with the next round, we will have a strong footprint in the US because the valuations are higher, right? It's not rational. They just do different metrics. And you know, if you, at the end, if you want to have a really leading solution, you need capital, right? So that's
100%. And I wanted to, because you touched on the investment, I wanted to ask you about, it was something that I wondered, and I also wrote in one of my recent blogs, and I was wondering, do you think it's worth for a space investor to invest in downstream, you know, Earth observation companies like, you know, like LiveEO? Because you can be considered part of the space industry and, you know, kind of go and or reach out or be reached out by space investor. Do you think there is value in it? Or do you think, because you mentioned earlier that, you know, you have B2B software investors, do you think it's better to go that way? Especially because in your case, you're not building any hardware. Do you even need to be considered, you know, part of this space umbrella? Or you think it's, you know, it's not that important?
My part in the investor discussions is very often to explain the ecosystem of the space industry. I think it's crucial to understand the potential of data analytics. I also mentioned to you all those satellite launches. I mentioned to you the launch in January with 143 satellites. And this is why we are definitely part of the space industry, of this bigger movement with new space. And that's why I also always, I sometimes, like, you can't imagine, Aravind, what kind of problems we have, like, very, where I thought that the space industry already solved them, right? Thinking about data access, if I talk to people from other industries, right, about APIs, it's a complete different thing than if you talk in the space industry about this, so.
Yeah, I come from the software world, so, you know, even API was, like, a huge thing in the space industry. I think it just got on in the last few years, actually, and
Planet, you know. Planet pushed them all. I talked to people. Don't want to say names here, but I talked to people and they said, why do we need an API? No. And even today, sometimes we have to send emails to get data from some operators, right? And it's why? you would just ask why. But if you show what happened in the past years, this positive development, right? Right now, everyone knows, oh my God, we need to have a better distribution model. Right, we don't want to read emails and, you know, send data like an FTP access. So that's also what has to happen on the data operator side. And this is why we are always communicating us as part of the space industry, and we educate with the ecosystem. And for me, this is also why I think the industry is now it was a tipping point that you can now build market-ready solutions, but it's still the beginning. Like, it's more like the MVP of the space industry, I would say, right? Because the access will be better in the future. Also, the downstream capabilities will increase, right, with ground stations from AWS and other activities. And then you can tell investors, look, we are right now, it's the perfect timing. We have a solution. If we would have started 3 years sooner, we have wasted a lot of capital, right? Because APIs were not there and this and that. If we started later, other companies would have grabbed this market. But we are still today very often the first talking to customers about solutions from space. And yeah, that's why it's super important to show this bigger picture.
Makes sense. I wanted to ask about the importance of, you know, talking about Earth observation within the space industry, because you touched on it in your, you know, previous response. But I feel like personally, Earth observation doesn't get talked about a lot, and it's often overlooked. There are some reasons for it, you know, in terms of if it has actually shown the market potential. You know, historically, it's just been defense. So, you know, it's usually just talked, you know, within the same conversation of, you know, the Earth observation industry is, you know, just giving data to, you know, the military and the larger defense world. But right now, you know, considering that, you know, there's a lot of applications across sectors like agriculture or utilities in your case and financial services, there's so much potential commercially speaking. So do you think that we'll start, you know, the role of Earth observation will get bigger within the space industry in the next few years? Because I would want that, because there's, you know, I try to evangelize as much as possible, but frankly, people only care about rockets and satellites or, you know, Moon and Mars. It's very hard to get the interest to Earth observation. That's why for me, sometimes I feel, you know what, it's just part of this larger software industry. So it's better off being together with software than being with space. Although I see your point about, you know, the link between the two. So I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on.
Yes, I mean, Earth observation was the main, like the starting point of the space industries back then with the SPICE satellites, right? Which coincidentally had the name Corona, right? The program back then. But so that was the origins. But I agree with you that it was mainly focused on defense and governmental industry. And one thing, like I really like to activate your thinking here. Did you see any B2C application utilizing Earth observation data, like you see GPS? I don't.
Not really. Yeah.
No, there is nothing out there. And it will happen. It will come. It just shows that the pricing, the access, and the solutions were just not there yet. And like we talked to a lot of people from the space industry, like space veterans, how it was with the GPS back then. They had no idea how to make money with this, right? And now today you can't think without this. And this will happen with Earth observation data for sure. I don't know if we will see the first B2C applications which we use in our daily life in 5 years, in 10 years. But I mean, just think about daily data from like the radar companies, ISI, Capella, right? Just think what kind of applications you could have in a city, right? You could you will definitely see those B2C applications. That's why it's still in its infancy, I would say, right? And also, when you really dive deep into Earth observation, you see a lot of technical limitations on the automation side still, also with satellite tasking, which I was also surprised how it works. It was very disappointing.
Yeah, we just got an interface, you know, in the last few years where you can actually go and task a satellite, which was, you know, for me coming from the software world, which was a software problem that needed to be solved, just like the conversation we had about APIs. But, you know, thankfully, it's, you know, we've moved on and it's better, far better than how it was 3-4 years ago.
And here, I mean, companies like Up42, right, who are really tackling also those tasking issues, but also Planet as an operator themselves, right, with a tasking API. And the tasking API they heavily invested in this in the past months, right? So or past year actually, and this is changing it. So yeah, it's still at the very beginning, and it will be a commercial driver for sure.
100%. I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned, you know, previously that, you know, you're data agnostic and you're happy about all the different types of data becoming available and different types of companies being launched in the Earth observation space. So I was wondering, do you think are there too many data companies in terms of, you know, satellite EO companies, or do you think there are too few? Because obviously you would have seen from the customer point of view whether you need more data, or the other way to ask this question is, do you think we need to solve the data availability problem, or do you need to solve the data access problem? You know, where do you think the prioritization needs to be? Because data availability is about launching all the satellites, and then data access is about, you know, how to distribute it. Do you think we need to prioritize one over the other?
So there are two questions. Let me answer the first one. I think there are too many project companies, right? We touched this topic. There are definitely too many project companies who are actually surviving with POCs and public funding. Like it's, I don't know the exact number, but it was something like 90% of the European's Earth observation industry is less than 20 employees, something like this, right? The companies and yeah, it's typically like the like those companies 5 to 10, very specialized on R&D activities and so on. So there are definitely too many project companies, which also then you know, for us sometimes customers work together with a project-based company which has no idea of this use case because they're doing everything, and this is this will also change because at some point in time, you know, we just the benefit of our solution is just too high. Now let's touch the second question regarding the availability and the access. So that's a tough one, I would say. If you would have asked, if you had asked me 1 year ago, I would say, yeah, the availability is already nice, yeah, with the SkySats, Airbus, and others, with, for the tasking, but also the archive data, right, with Sentinel. But also, I mean, the best archive out there is the Planet Duff archive, right? So availability is there, and now you could argue, okay, for Planet Duff, also the access is there via API, right? But with this data set, you just can solve a few problems, right? And for some, you need this high resolution data. And there, what I definitely can say, the availability, it was a surprise to me, is still not there. It still takes too long to cover areas for tasking. And you know, you need to tackle both, but I was really surprised how long it takes to task some areas. And we are right now, we are tasking a lot of satellite data. Yeah. So and this will be harder to fix, right? Because you need to launch the satellites. Yeah. I think one company which is solving the access side also in a very, very interesting way is SkyWatch, right? With their TerraStream product, which is super interesting because also for the small operators, they built the IT. So I think the data availability, it will be finally solved. And then it's really about, okay, we need to task data and get the right data. And that's an availability problem. Yeah.
You know, I wrote about this also last week, and I called it a boring problem because nobody wants to solve this. You know, what SkyWatch is doing, you don't have, you know, 20 other people doing. But somehow we have 20, 25, 50 companies working on their own satellite constellation, but maybe two or three, like a SkyWatch, you know. It's kind of like a boring problem, and I related it to how there is, you know, there are similarities with Stripe. You know, every e-commerce store uses Stripe, or you know, Shopify, which is more on the e-commerce side again. If you buy something, you use them, and you know, that's there are some boring problems in Earth observation, and SkyWatch is, you know, tackling one of them. And you know, there's standardization of the imagery that needs to happen because you can't really overlay one imagery on top of the other today, which, you know, for again, which sounds logical, but that is not the case. So hopefully we get to work on, you know, use cases or solving use cases like that. All right, moving on to some lessons learned, because obviously, you know, you both, Sven and you, have started LiveEO, and, you know, I would argue it's one of the, you know, successful case studies for Earth observation downstream companies out there that has a scalable solution. So, you know, you have made it in one way. I know that you would probably have a long way to go, and you know, you want to get somewhere, but
just wanted to say that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you've kind of established yourself into doing this. You know, you kind of have done it as one of the first few to done it. You know, you could have taken a project-based approach. It's a very easy way to do it. You know, just finding scalable customers or scalable use cases is a hard way. It's a risky way. So you guys have done it. So I was going to ask you from a learning and lessons learned perspective. So would you advise, you know, do you think we need more downstream EO companies out there working on, you know, what LiveEO is doing, not exactly for your own specific use case, but in general? And, you know, what would you advise folks who want to start companies in Earth observation?
Yeah, so I mean, people should launch a company. It's the best what you can do to really change the industry, right? And of course, you should not compete with us. that would not make sense. But there are so many opportunities out there. And this was also a challenge for Sven and me at the very beginning. Oh my God, we could like the first idea we actually had was for monitoring beaches, right? So you water quality, and okay, you could even see how many people are there, right? Counting the towels and so on, and okay, so there are so many opportunities out there. So yes, definitely we need more startups in this field. What I would advise here is really that you need to focus. There will be so much inbound. Satellite. Can you also do this? Can you also do that? Yes, theoretically, but you have to say no. You have to really focus, and because in Germany, there is the saying, the devil is in the detail, right? I don't know if you also know the saying, but it's really true for applications based on remote sensing. And so you need to reduce the complexity by focusing on a use case, because the complexity is really, really high. I completely underestimated 4 or 5 years ago the complexity to build applications on this, right? We just talked about the data access, that's just the starting point. Solutions which work in a POC, in an MVP, it is super easy. I mean, even without coding, you can open a GIS like QGIS and you can download some satellite imagery, do some classifications, whatever. This is done within a few days or a few weeks and you have a POC, which is great because you can go to customers. But to make it scalable after this, that's the huge challenge. And for us, it was super exciting because after a few months, we had a customer, Europe's largest transportation company, the German railway operator Deutsche Bahn, and we had to analyze 33,000 kilometers. Okay, a challenge accepted, right? So there was evolutionary pressure that we go on scale. And this is completely crazy what has to happen there. Just on so many different ways. Of course, you need a very good cloud architecture which scales. But also from a machine learning perspective, it's super exciting challenge to build generalized models on which work in the south of Germany and in the north of Germany. Not talking about another country, right? And of course, you want to have generalized models which work in the entire US. So this is something where people really should not underestimate. If they started their own Earth observation company, think about scale from the very beginning. Otherwise, you would just be a POC machine.
Yeah, no, that's a very valid point. You know, POC machine. That's there are some examples like that. And you know, well, unfortunately for the industry, it's also to do with a lot of the problems that you mentioned and the challenges that we need to solve as an industry. All right, a few wrap up questions. If you had about 100 million in hand, and I know that you know you're super excited about space and also Earth observation, so if you're an investor who has 100 million in hand, or you can even assume it's you you have 100 million in hand, what are you going to invest in? You know, maybe you can pick three, or maybe you want to put everything into one project. What would you do with 100 million?
So I think I would invest around 50 million in Lifeo.
Yeah. Oh, so, maybe I should have added a small supply. Yeah.
Yeah. No. But I think I would invest. So I definitely would invest in Planet. I would not invest in others which went public, but Planet, because of they are the role model for data access. So that's an Earth observation. And of course, if it doesn't make sense now to invest into another data analytics company, that's why Lifeo would be in the Earth observation, definitely a point. What I am really excited about is space manufacturing. So I think here there is a lot of potential, but it's pretty early, right? So it would be some smaller investments in this domain. Then there are some... So there are some companies which combine hardware and software, right? And those companies I really like. I think also the on-orbit servicing is really a really crazy challenge. So I would focus on those deep tech challenges besides. It's actually diversifying. So Planet, that will definitely start, and Lifeo, of course. But I would then, because it's my passion also as a space engineer, invest into those enablers, actually, into those technologies which enable then the future growth of the market. So that's definitely what I would do. And that's also what I will do in my life, right? That's a plan. So I'm dedicated to the space industry. And after Maybe in 20 years, right? Let's see. Hopefully, LiveView will grow further. Then it's not only me; it's also my co-founder Sven. We will continue this path.
Sure. Right? I think I didn't ask you. So, what's the roadmap? You know, where do you want to be in the next few years, 3 years, 5 years? How does LiveView look like? You know, what's success look like for LiveView and you and Sven?
So we really want to be the leading engine, actually, how Earth observation analytics are used by enterprises. So this is something where we want to focus, where we want to be the leading company. That means that we go also beyond our current use cases, right, for utilities. That means we need a lot of abstraction in our model. So this is where we want to be the leading company, right? What you mentioned, the Stripe. You just mentioned it in the thinking about the data access, but also for utility, you know, they should not think about data access, but they should also not think about the processing actually and how to make actionable insights and how to build map or other applications on top of this. So this is something where we want to position ourselves in 5 years, and we also do it in a different way than others, with a vertical focus first and not as a horizontal platform, because my belief is that for horizontal platforms, the critical mass of developers who work with this data is not enough, and the complexity is too high. So that's why we actually in the next 5 years want to use our end-to-end pipeline and strategically tackle other use cases, so that we have tackled more, and you know, strategically have grown into like horizontally actually.
Fair enough, makes sense. Well, yeah, one last, before we go to the last question, I also wanted to, you know, give you a chance to talk about New Space Vision and what you and Sven are doing there, because you have a podcast, if I'm not mistaken, that's also called New Space Vision, and you organize, or in the past you probably organized meetups. I don't know if you want to talk about it quickly as well.
Yeah, I'm super happy to do this, because this was also the starting point. So before Sven and I knew what we will do in the space industry, we started to organize meetups about the space industry with New Space Vision, because you can meet different entrepreneurs, right, or different companies. You get a good network, and then you can also get a feeling for the ecosystem. And this is something we are still continuing, and also are opening up to an audience, right? Back then, before the pandemic, we had meetups in our office with 80, 90 people, right? So just it was very crowded, but it was fun, and we had Capella Space, ISI, and so on, everyone like in our office. So we hope that we will continue this, but in the pandemic we focused a bit more on the podcast. So last year we published 10 podcasts, super super exciting ones, with a for example, one founder of Spire, right, or actually the person who rented the Mir station as a US citizen. So that's something we are still doing, and that's an important part for us. I really like also your initiative with the podcast. It's important that we spread the message out there. And so yeah, as mentioned, I think the next meetup now should be planned, because I think, you know, with the 2G rules which we have here, like tested or vaccinated, or you already had it, you can do some events again. And yeah, it's important that people also, our goal was also to connect people from other industries, actually, to New Space Vision. So our marketing campaigns were also targeted to software engineers or other hardware engineers, right, outside of the space industry. Bring people together, have a drink, talk about space, see nice presentations. Yeah. So that will continue in the future.
Yeah, that's that sounds great. And hopefully I can join you for one of them. Last question. If you have you know, the opportunity which you have now, what would be the one line that you want to tell the space industry or Earth observation, or, you know, you can choose your audience, one line message, what would be your online message?
So this goes out to all the entrepreneurs, to all the employees, and also to all the investors who are in the space industry or want to go into the space industry. We are all underestimating what's happening right now in a historical context. It's bigger than we think.
It's bigger than we think. All right. That sounds good. And that's a good note to end the podcast. Thank you. Thank you, Daniel, for being on the podcast. And it was a very fun and insightful chat with you.
Definitely, Arvind. I really enjoyed it. And I'm also looking forward to the next podcast from you.
Hey, this is Arvind again. Thanks for listening. If you like this episode,
please subscribe to the Terawatt Space podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. Also, feel free to sign up for my newsletter, TerraWatch on Substack. That is terawatch.substack.com, where I attempt to decode the recent developments in space tech and its impact on Earth. Thanks again, and hope to see you for the next episode.